Chapter 50, About Many Foreseen and Unforeseen Events. The 3 days mentioned by Moonlight passed by. Christian and Big Tiger cleaned the truck and emptied the water out of the cans. They looked into the drum and found it contained gasoline. Kasim helped them to pump up the tires, and twice a day he rode over to Khao Chang to get food. Sometimes Christian or Big Tiger relieved him of this duty, and each time Khao Chang asked whether good fortune had arrived. But actually, Khao Chang was in no hurry. Hu had come back from Tsing Tsing Ha on the third day with a lot of good things, so these inquiries were a mere formality. The fourth day passed, and good fortune had not come. Christian got out his thickest notebook and began writing. "What are you doing?" asked Big Tiger. "I'm writing a diary," said Christian. "I should have started it long ago. Now I have to make up for lost time, and it's a lot of work." "Why have you got to do that?" asked Big Tiger. "So that I shall know later what has happened, where we were, and whether the sun was shining, or whether there was storm or snow." "There were all those things, and I never thought of them again." "That's just it," said Christian. "That's just why it's necessary to write them down." Big Tiger remained unconvinced. He sat in the sun, and as there was no more work to do, Kasim collected black and white stones, swept a place clean near the truck, and drew a square on the ground with a wrench. He divided the square into many squares, and he and Big Tiger played checkers until evening. But still good fortune did not come. The evening of the fifth day came. Christian had finished writing, and Kasim had just ridden off to fetch the food when the clatter of hoofs resounded from the gorge. Something black swept along under the willows, and a seemingly endless splashing of water became audible. "Dog, come here!" shouted Christian and Big Tiger, and the poodle jumped up on them. He jumped up first on one and then the other, ran round in circles, and barked continuously and so frightfully loud that if the gallant captain had heard him, he would certainly have been terrified. But Falling Wall did not stir. Christian and Big Tiger ran to meet Good Fortune, who was the first to come down through the defile. He was sitting proudly on the haughty camel, which was projecting its upper lip, slipping with its front legs and breaking with its hind quarters. Good Fortune was wearing the pistol with the red tassel, looking very impressive. After him came Affliction on foot, leading the pack camel, and Tolus riding Christian's camel brought up the rear. "So there you are," said Good Fortune, dismounting. He had meant to show that he was hurt because he had missed everything, both at Ming Shui and at Falling Wall. And Moonlight had told him some glorious tales when they had met at the Venerable Chief's stronghold. Christian and Big Tiger bowed politely. They said, "We have taken care of ourselves as our esteemed elder desired, and we have acted as if he were there. We are immeasurably glad to see him again." This salutation broke the ice in Good Fortune's heart. "Oh, you young rascals, it gladdens my heart to see you. I have long missed the sight of you," he cried. Affliction left the three camels standing, and Tolus slipped down carefully from his saddle. For a time, everyone talked at once, and nobody could hear anything. In between, the poodle barked, but the camels went silently and thoughtfully down to the water. When the noise had quieted down a little, Affliction said, "I hear there's been a first-class catastrophe." "Over there," said Christian, pointing to the masses of rock which lay at the foot of the wall and at all the rubble which lay for a wide radius around. Tolus stared at the mountain of broken rock which covered the mouth of the cave, but he said nothing. Having lived in Anxi, he knew the story of Falling Wall. Nor was he in the least surprised that Shong Ma had turned out to be behind the disaster. But he was not at all pleased with how things had turned out. "I knew they'd never catch him," he growled, knitting his brows, "and they didn't." "It was heaven's decree," declared Affliction quietly, "that he should be crushed to death. What can mortals do against that?" Tolus did not reply, but it was plain he did not share Affliction's opinion. Together they led the camels up near the truck, and Christian and Big Tiger helped to unload. The blue tent was set up, and when Cassim returned, there was a fire burning. There was plenty to eat and plenty to talk about, for Cassim could converse with Tolas, who spoke Turkey, like a sart. Good fortune got busy with the truck. "You've cleaned it up wonderfully," he said. "Now let's see if the motor will work." He pulled up his sleeves and turned the crank a few times. The engine began to hum, and the camels, which luckily were already tied, jumped up. "We shall start tomorrow," said Good Fortune joyfully. "The next day we shall be in Hami, and I shall have the pleasure of paying my respects to Mr. Liwan Pei. He won't be too pleased to see me." "Food! Food!" cried Affliction, and as there were spiced meat dumplings for supper, he did not have to call twice. Afterwards, Christian wrote in his diary, "Today is the 10th day of the third moon. Good Fortune, Affliction, and Uncle Tolas arrived. It was, as in the storybooks, our dog was the first to greet us. He barked very loud and licked our faces. It was fine. Good Fortune says he has brought us something, but he won't give it to us until the morning. He behaves as if tomorrow was New Year's Day instead of being April. He's going to visit Liwan Pei in Hami, and I believe we shall have to stop him from shooting again, or at least pretend to. Tolas told us that they're packing up at the castle, and that Moonlight said Damping Yak is going to be a great king, and that all the silver we have on the truck is only chicken feed, and they don't need it. But Good Fortune looked quite perturbed when he saw it, and Affliction said something would definitely happen, but that he'd prefer not to be there when it does. Good Fortune has ridden over to Cao Cheng on Kasim's horse to make a plan. It will be late when he gets back. We're sleeping in the tent again, and our dog is guarding us. Good Fortune came back in the night. The waxing moon was shining down on the silent valley. The stream glittered, and the cans shone. The snores of the sleepers resounded from the dark tent, and the dog gave a few loud barks. Good Fortune would have liked to shout, "Get up, men, we are starting!" But with only one headlight and the battery out of action, he had to let it be. Before dawn, however, he got up, made a fire, put the kettle on, and roused everyone relentlessly. "Men," he cried, eager for action, "this is what Cao Cheng and I have agreed. You, old uncle, shall come with us to Tsing Sing Ha, and Cao Cheng shall come with us also, because he is responsible for the silver. Affliction shall follow with the camels, and then you can plan what you want to do." "We've already decided," said Affliction, "and we've also found a name." "What have you done?" asked Good Fortune. "The main thing," said Affliction, "is to find a good name, a really meaningful name, so that people won't dream of stopping anywhere but at our inn." "You mean to open a saloon?" cried Good Fortune. "A first-class inn," Affliction corrected him tactfully, "with at least three or four rooms, and in each room a gong which won't smoke. Nobody need ever again ask in Tsing Tsing Ha, 'Where is your excellency staying?' for naturally his excellency will put up at the inn Contented Cheerfulness, where Uncle Tolas shall look after the kitchen, and I shall be porter and head waiter." "What?" asked Good Fortune, and then, "Do I understand you aright? And why exactly in Tsing Tsing Ha?" "Dear nephew," said Tolas, "you need not be very bright to know that. Tsing Tsing Ha is the first town inside the old governor's province. All who travel on the Silk Road have to put up there. Up till now, there are only miserable low dives in Tsing Tsing Ha, but we shall change all this." "Ha!" cried Good Fortune. "There are rogues, and there are people who think of tomorrow instead of yesterday and the day before. I congratulate you." "Please accept our heartiest congratulations," said Big Tiger. "May the incontented cheerfulness prosper," said Christian. Good Fortune went to the luggage and opened a parcel which was firmly tied up in blue cloth. "This is the right time," he said. "Gain follows loss. See what the venerable chief sends you." He opened the cloth. There lay the 10 silver bars from the Black City, 6 heavily loaded bags, and a whole lot of haddocks. Now I shall have to think hard to remember the words the venerable chief commissioned me to say, said Good Fortune. He laid the silver shoes in two. That made five presents, and over each he spread a haddock. Come here, you two, he said to Christian and Big Tiger, who knelt down politely. That's right. Reverence is called for now, because you have acquired another relative. The venerable chief said, give my brothers, Compass Mountain and Big Tiger, two silver bars each as a souvenir of the little treasure and of their brother, Dampignac, who embraces them. Big Tiger and Christian stood up. And now you, said Good Fortune. Me, cried Affliction, alarmed. Don't be frightened, said Good Fortune. You're not the brother of a prince, but you also are to have two silver bars, because you were in the Black City, too. Give them to the man, said Dampignac, who stood on the east wall, keeping a lookout. And you're to get two also, old uncle, continued Good Fortune. Present them to old Tolus, said Dampignac. We have done worse things to him than a man can bear. Pray him to forgive me and Moonlight, that our remorse may be lessened. Tolus looked sorrowfully at the silver bars and at the blue haddock, which half covered them. But Affliction said, the present is given with a good intention. You should accept it. I, too, said Good Fortune, beg your forgiveness for my bad behavior, old uncle. Moonlight told me of your misfortune, and it has made my heart heavy. He threw himself on his knees before Tolus and touched the ground with his forehead four times. Stand up, said Tolus. I have nothing to forgive you. Good Fortune took the two remaining silver bars, which belonged to himself, and then he pointed to the six bags. These silver bots are for Khan Cheng and his soldiers. Will you please inform Kasim of this, honored uncle, and tell him to take them to Cao Cheng, who is waiting for us at the end of the valley? When Kasim was informed, he beamed with joy. There were 50 silver bots in each bag, and that was a great deal of money. He packed them up and mounted his horse at once. The tent was then broken up and packed away. Affliction led the camels out of the valley of Falling Wall to behind the hill on which Kasim had lain. That was the meeting place with Cao Cheng. Uncle Tolus took his seat in the driver's cab, and Christian and Big Tiger jumped up on the running boards as Good Fortune started up. The motor hummed, and through sheer habit, Good Fortune sounded the horn again and again as he drove along with a thundering noise under the barrier of rocks. The poodle ran behind, barking. The din echoed back from Falling Wall, but the rocks did not move. At the exit from the valley, Cao Cheng was awaiting them with his soldiers. Unhoped-for riches have come our way, he said with a smile. In the name of all, I salute the envoy of the prince, whose generosity has lightened our wretched lot. It was a pleasant duty, replied Good Fortune. And now get in, please. Where? Asked Cao Cheng uneasily, looking at the strange vehicle on which the cans left no room for anyone. Let us throw off the cans. They're unnecessary, suggested Good Fortune. But there's something in them, Cao Cheng reminded him. That's just why I waited for you to be present, Good Fortune explained. You have to be here to count the silver bars as we take them out of the cans. That's not necessary, cried Cao Cheng loftily. But then he remembered he was an important officer. So, while Christian and Big Tiger emptied the cans, he watched the silver bars being piled up and counted them. Good, he said finally, with dignity, but he did not betray how many there were. While Christian and Big Tiger were making a pile of the empty cans in the bed of the stream, Affliction came running towards them, carrying some things he had forgotten, the freshly filled saddlebag and Christian's and Big Tiger's sheepskin coats and felt shoes. They at once took off their magnificent new Mongolian costumes and folded them neatly away. Then they climbed into the truck, taking the poodle with them. Hold him tight, said Good Fortune. He has to get used to driving in an automobile. I'll sit with you two, cried Uncle Tolus. There's fresh air and entertainment up there. You must tell me everything. We welcome you, old uncle, said Christian. Cao Cheng and Good Fortune clasped hands for him, and Uncle Tolis climbed up. Big Tiger and Christian took him each by an arm and made a comfortable place for him. He sat down, nodding happily. Is Affliction traveling alone? Asked Christian anxiously. Don't you worry, replied Tolis. Kasim is going with him, and he will probably stay with us and take charge of the stables. At that rate, said Big Tiger, you will have two master marksmen to entertain the guests of the inn, contented cheerfulness, with stone throwing and sharpshooting. I wish you a pleasant journey, old uncle, said Affliction, walking alongside. Ah, the unlucky dog is up there too. May many lucky stars shine on you all the same. They couldn't hear any more, for just then Good Fortune started up. The Tungans had all they could do to hold their horses. Affliction stepped back a few paces, but Cao Cheng sat proudly in the driver's cab and waved out of the now glassless window. Christian and Big Tiger roared, Seya Bona! The Tungans also shouted something, and Affliction wished a lucky journey, though he thought it most unlikely they would have it. It was early in the morning, and Affliction would have been extremely surprised if anyone had told him that the truck had thundered through the only street of Tsing Tsing Hao 2 hours later, raising a cloud of dust, and had stopped before the biggest house in it. The criminal lived here, said Cao Cheng, getting out. Two soldiers were standing before the hall door, which was pasted up with broad strips of paper. To left and right shone two fresh red seals. Open, ordered Captain Cao Cheng. No, said the soldiers, crossing their guns. The orders of the old governor are that the hall door is only to be opened to Colonel Cao Cheng. Forgive us, Captain, but we cannot obey your orders. Christian and Big Tiger jumped down from the truck, and the poodle jumped down after them and started barking furiously because everything was strange and new to him. The dust, the houses, the people, and above all, the soldiers who were making angry faces. We congratulate you on your promotion, cried Big Tiger. The captain, said Christian, has attained a very high rank. We congratulate him. Then the mayor came running. He knew Cao Cheng and tore down the paper seals. The soldiers presented arms, and before he went to sleep, Christian wrote in his diary, We are in Tsing Tsing Ha, and it is the 11th day of the third moon. The poodle is lying in the truck because he knows he has to watch it. He is no ordinary dog. Greencoat's house is big. There are four rooms in it, and two big storerooms full of bales of cotton. There are 40 cans of gasoline in the yard, and they belong to us. The name Li Wan Pei is stamped on them, but the mayor says that's to be disregarded. The house and everything in it belongs to nobody, because the caretaker and the servants were frightened when they heard what had happened at Falling Wall. And now the mayor is frightened, too, because he should have arrested them. But he couldn't, for they weren't there when he tried to. But Good Fortune calmed him down and said it doesn't matter. And Cao Cheng said, though he's a colonel now, he'll shut his eyes in the case of people who are not so brainy or so watchful as himself. This made the mayor very much ashamed, and he thanked the gallant colonel for his tolerance, and Cao Cheng said he was surprised other people hadn't noticed it, but he had suspected all along that Greencoat was not a merchant, but a criminal. The house and the yard are to be sold by auction tomorrow, but the mayor says he'll manage things so that it will go to Tolis. They will just begin the auction a bit early, and it will be quite simple. Cao Cheng is very pleased about this and very gracious, and he has promised the mayor he'll allow him to remain in office, as he's the right man for it, and he's promised Tolis he'll honor him whenever he comes to Tsing Tsing Ha. We know what that means, and Uncle Tolis knows, too. We're going to Hami tomorrow, and Cao Cheng is coming with us to make a report to the old governor and tell him how to catch criminals. The manager of the telegraph station came out and inquired after our health. He has to send a telegram about it and another one as soon as we go out the gate. Cao Cheng says the province is well ruled. The following evening, Christian wrote, "Today is the 12th day of the third moon, and we are in Hami. We drove more than 120 miles along the Silk Road through the desert, and if Cao Cheng hadn't got sick on the way, we'd have been here an hour sooner. We said goodbye to Uncle Tolis early this morning. He was very sad and said, 'Little sons, in 4 years you will be grown-up men, and you must visit me then, if the world is still in existence.' We promised him we would, and asked him to give our greetings to Kasim and Affliction, and to tell Affliction we'd look out for a good place in Peking to practice stone-throwing, and we'd be experts when we see him again. The telegraph man came too, and then we drove off, and he ran into his house where the telegraph wires are. I believe he sent a telegram because when we came through the town gate of Hami, we had to drive very slowly. There was such a crowd there, soldiers with drums and trumpets too, and they blew and drummed, and Cao Cheng said it was in honor of him. Afterwards, we had to drive to the Yamen, and there was a general to receive us who put his hand to his cap. He was very thin and sick-looking. Big Tiger says that's from smoking opium and that it's a wicked shame. We drank tea with him when it's a formal invitation. You drank nothing or only a sip at the most. We showed the general we knew how to behave, and when he tried to make us drink the tea, we handed back the cups 3 times." And then the visit ended. Hami is a magnificent town. Up till now, it has been desert everywhere, but here it's one melon garden after another, and there are trees and streets and lots of shops. Far up in the north, there are high snowy mountains. They speak Turki in Hami, and there's a castle as high as a tower with a Mohammedan king in it. The king sent us a red visiting card inviting us to visit him. Good Fortune said he'd rather visit Liwan Pei. We took his pistol from him before he went, but we had only just eaten 10 poppy cakes and some candied apples and dates and salted almonds and nougat that the thin general sent us when Good Fortune came back. He said, 'That son of a dog has run away too, and his shop is sealed up.' After that, we visited the king, who lives outside the gate where only Mohammedans live. We went through a big gate, and it was dark inside, and there were 2 men with big gray beards. They held halberds in their hands. My teacher says that's medieval, and it's past, but it's not past in Hami. A very friendly man came and led us into the courtyard. 5 frightful animals were chained there. They snarled and showed their teeth. I thought they were white tigers, but Big Tiger says they're snow leopards. His uncle knows them. At the end of the courtyard, there was a wooden staircase, and an old man was standing on it. He smiled and came to meet us, and we guessed he was the king. There was a pavilion at the top of the stairs where we had to drink tea. We handed back our cups 3 times to show how polite we were, and each time the king put another lump of sugar in them. We thought he should know one doesn't take sugar in tea. Luckily, someone spoke Chinese, and he said we should drink the tea as we were guests of a Mohammedan Turki and not of a Chinaman, and the customs were different everywhere. Then we had a question and answer game. The king asked the questions, the interpreter asked them again, and we answered. And when we got home, a big parcel of sweets had already arrived with the greetings of the Turki king." When Christian had finished writing, he and Big Tiger went into the courtyard where the poodle was lying beside the truck. They took some dried meat out of their bag and fetched some water from the kitchen, for here it was not as in Dumpinyak's castle. In Hami, a dog had to fend for himself. Then they prepared a sleeping place for him up on the truck and told him to watch carefully. "That's not necessary," said 2 soldiers who had come to guard the truck and the silver during the night. But Big Tiger said, "He's used to doing that. He's no ordinary dog." When they returned to the guest room, Cao Cheng and Good Fortune were already lying on the kong. Cao Cheng could not sleep for a long time. He could hear the night watchman beating wooden clappers to warn thieves of their presence. Then the poodle growled, and Cao Cheng heard him gnashing his teeth. "The accursed dog," said one of the soldiers under his breath. "There's nothing we can do," whispered the second soldier. "Rogues," thought Cao Cheng, amused. He smiled, for he could feel for poor soldiers who seldom got paid, but he could not get to sleep all the same. It was morning before he fell into an uneasy slumber. But then good fortune got up, filled the tank and the radiator, and as the sun rose, the truck drove out the western gate. The desert began again right away after Hami, but it no longer reigned supreme. Here and there were isolated farms and little hamlets, and fertile loess soil could be seen forcing its way through the sand. Only water was lacking. It had to be led laboriously through underground canals from the foot of the nearby mountains to the fields. The cart track which connected the villages was bad, and there were only two settlements, some 60 miles apart, which had more than 5 houses. One was Lo Tung, where the road to Turfan through the Devil's Valley branched off, and the other was Tsikyoking, which they reached late in the afternoon. Men and children stood in the road, staring at the unusual guests. There was an inn of a kind, but one look at the guest room was enough for good fortune. When he came back, he said, "We shall sleep on the truck. We didn't get lice up till now, and we'll keep clear of them." Christian gave Big Tiger the diary, and Big Tiger wrote carefully in his beautiful Chinese ideographs, "We are in Tsikyoking. It is the 13th day of the third moon. The inhabitants of this village are sarts. The men wear big beards, and the women are never seen. There are high, bare mountains all around. Cao Cheng speaks perfect Turkey, and we admire him for that. He got a splendid supper for us, a dish called palau, made of rice with a lot of mutton and raisins and slices of quince. Good fortune is very well, so is Compass Mountain, and so am I. The dog is guarding us so we can sleep in peace. It was a lucky day with good omens." Nobody thought of disturbing the nocturnal peace of Tsikyoking, and they all slept well. When the mullah's call to morning prayer rang through the air, there is a note that says, "Mullah, religious teacher of Mohammedanism." When the mullah's call to morning prayer rang through the air, good fortune got up, yet they did not reach the high pass of Ta Chi Tu, which leads over the Barkul Mountains, until past midday. From there onward, the route was downhill, and they arrived at Ku Cheng in the evening, an hour before the gate closed. It was quite late when Christian took out the diary and wrote, "Today is the 14th day of the third moon. The moon is shining into the courtyard where our truck is standing beside another one belonging to the governor. There's an oil lamp in our room and lots of things to eat. There was an express letter waiting for us with hearty greetings from the marshal. He's glad he will see us soon. We left Tsikyoking and went up high snowy mountains. All the same, the water boiled in the radiator, and we had to get out and push the brake shoes under, and it was fun to watch Cao Cheng's face when the truck wouldn't go. But it went on in a bit, and then another bit, and then we came to Ta Chi Tu, which looks just the same as Tsikyoking, only there are no telegraph poles. We took tea out in the street, and we saw a man on a horse coming from Barkul. He looked thin and miserable. Good fortune shouted, "Son of a dog," and "Lousy ruffian," and made a grab at his whip. But Cao Cheng held his arm and said, "Why do you want to beat the honorable gentleman?" Then, all of a sudden, a big crowd gathered, and they said, "There must be a mistake." Big Tiger and I went up to the man on the horse and greeted him politely. It was Mr. Ma, and he looked quite done in. Good fortune raged on, but we said Mr. Ma wasn't a stingy fellow, and if he had his camels with him, he'd give us a fine present for old time's sake. "Where are your camels?" Good fortune asked him, and Ma said he had left the caravan long ago. He had ridden on ahead day and night and had spent a fortune on fodder, but it was no use. His horse was half dead. Good fortune said, "You're an irresponsible wretch," and Ma cried and said he was ruined. Then we invited him to have tea, and when he saw all the lovely food from the Turkey King, he cheered up. Good fortune asked him, Why did you ride on ahead? And Ma said it was because he had to send an urgent telegram in Sikyoking. Good Fortune said, even if you get a fresh horse, you won't be there before tomorrow evening. And then Big Tiger said, very slowly, if the esteemed Mr. Ma wishes to telegraph to Li Wan Pei that he's not to pay Green Coat any money, then that's not necessary. You would not think it should frighten people when you try to help them, but Ma went dead white, and Cao Cheng had to hold him up, and the men of Tashi Tu stepped back 2 paces because they thought Big Tiger must be a prophet. And then I said, there's nothing to be frightened about. The check for 3,500 bahts is lying under a mountain of stones where no one can find it, and Green Coat can't cash it because he's lying under the stones too, and Li Wan Pei isn't in Hami anymore. His hall door is sealed up, and soldiers are guarding it. Then the men of Tashi Tu shouted, Allah Akbar, and the note says, Allah Akbar means Allah is great. And it took Mr. Ma a long time to understand that there are boys who crawl about in passages under old forts and happen to hear 2 men quarreling about a jewel casket and a check. In the end, Mr. Ma smiled feebly and said, so you are little bandits after all. But Good Fortune said, ride back to your caravan, you negligent fellow. And he gave him lots of good advice. Don't get mixed up in shady business again, you numbskull. And if you go near rotten fish, you soon stink yourself. As we had learned from Moonlight, the proper thing to do, we divided the gifts of the king of Hami into 3 parts and laid a haddock over Mr. Ma's share, which we presented to him kneeling. We got so many blessings that we arrived in Kucheng safely. We are now honored guests in the Yamen, and the old governor has sent us another truck so that the heavy load of silver can be divided. Cao Cheng watched and counted, and now he knows how many silver bars there are, but he doesn't say because it's a state secret. We are driving tomorrow to the capital, which has 2 names. The Chinese call it Tiwa, and the Turkeys call it Urumqi, and the Bogdo Ola can be seen from there, though it's very far away. That's a Mongolian name, meaning Mountain of the Gods. It's so high, no one has ever got to the top of it yet. It says on the map that it's 21,000 feet high. People can't breathe so high up. But how can someone sitting on a chair in London know that? The Bogdo Ola is full of snow and ice, and where the snow stops, there are woods, and there live the Kyrgyz, who speak Turki. Big Tiger says Xinjiang is a puzzling country. I find that too, but we're going to sleep now, and Cao Cheng is snoring already, because he has to stay awake and watch out so much.